All right, we're back with Bootstrapped Web. We've got a party episode for you guys today. Our friend Rob Williams is on the line. What's up, Rob?
What's up, guys?
All right, and Jordan, as always, how's it going, buddy?
Good, good. Nice to join you guys. Robert, thanks for coming on for Friday morning party episode.
Maybe at some point Alan Branch will be calling in. We're not quite sure. He might be lost at sea somewhere.
But, we're rooting for the call-in from the sailboat. That'll be a new one for us.
Yeah, we'll keep the suspense up on that one. But, you know, Rob, I think you've been on the show a couple months back. You and I used to be in a mastermind group together for a while. What's going on with Let's Workshop? You know, some folks may be familiar with it, but I know you've gone through some changes over the last couple months. So where things are right now?
Yeah, Workshop's been kind of a slow build. I've done some pricing changes and some different things, and it's just kind of kept growing slowly, and I'm happy with it. And people, freelancers in the service, keep winning contracts from the leads we find. So happy about it.
We were just talking about before the recording, it's kind of like half software, half service, kind of like what Jordan and I were talking about last week, you know, combining the two. It's basically an email list where you send out handpicked freelance leads, like quality leads to freelancers, but it's all handpicked with your team, and they send out the email, and then there's some software where they can kind of manage their leads and that sort of thing. It's kind of cool.
Exactly. It's kind of like if Google Alerts were like really good and like not just like random stuff. Like if you set it up to send you freelancing gigs from all around the web and it actually worked, that's kind of what Workshop is. But there's people behind the process that are actually doing the sorting and stuff and finding it.
It sounds like as close to the fantasy kind of offering for a freelancer as possible. You just pay and get leads. It's like the most straightforward possible thing. I'm curious about the pricing change.
Yeah.
Can I ask you what the pricing was and what it is now and why, like what the reasoning behind it was?
The reasoning behind it was, we were starting to send out more leads. The leads were becoming a lot better, and we started actually doing manual outreach for the freelancers. So freelancers don't even actually have to contact the leads anymore. We contact the leads for them and then kind of refer them to the specific freelancers and connect them. So we just started doing more for the freelancers. So we raised the price.
And it's actually you're actually emailing the leads.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like we send the leads to the freelancer. So if you're a freelancer in the service, you can handle the outreach yourself. And we do encourage that, like, you know, go ahead and do that. But we also do that on the side too, because we kind of are able to refer those back to the people in Workshop and give them kind of a second chance at the leads if they didn't get it the first time.
Very cool.
And the pricing change made the service a little more exclusive also. Like, we've been kind of aggressive. That was one thing me and Brian talked a lot about in our mastermind, was like, I've been kind of aggressive with the pricing on the service. And so I think it's kind of like helped reward people who signed up early and who, like, because I grandfather everybody in. So there's some people, like when you sign up, you know you're going to have the best price for, you know, moving forward. So.
Interesting, man. I'm fascinated by pricing. And
yeah. It's so hard. It's like an art and a science, you know.
It's just, yeah, it feels very much like a guess, but there's like this crazy internal argument you have with yourself.
Yeah.
Like almost like depending on the day, depending on the feedback, depending on the comment that you just got, like that like sets you off in one direction or another.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so tough. It's like, it's really hard, like where I'm at with the new SaaS product that we're building. I'm just thinking through a couple pricing options, and I've been getting feedback from people on that. So it's really hard before your product is launched, but it's like, it doesn't get any easier 2-3 years after your product is launched either. You know?
I like counterbalancing my like internal logic that's based on emotion, not logic. I like using other examples as like a marker. So I'm like, I know that Samcart has like 2,000 customers and they have this weird pricing. So whatever argument I can make, that's actually something that's more real. Like I use that as like the argument against what I'm feeling. Like, oh, and you know, Growbot does this other thing and they charge minimum $500 a month with an annual plan, whereas their competitor charges like $29 a month. So like there is, like you can't argue with reality as much as possible.
Right. There are examples that you can point to that like, look, people build, they, you know, they must have some sort of viable business there. There is a market at that price point and, you know, both ends of this.
Yeah. And I also find that if you listen to people who are easily accessible online, they drive the thinking and the price down. But if you get on the phone with someone who does real business and is making millions of dollars a year, that drives the price up. Is that person will be...
You mean if they don't show their pricing?
Yeah, like if you listen to someone on a Facebook comment, they're like too expensive. Everyone says too expensive in that context. You get someone on the phone and they talk to you and they realize, hey, this is a quality business person I'm talking to. They're like, I'll pay whatever you want because I know this is going to make me money. It's going to save me $150,000 this year. It's worth it. And then that like brings your mentality like upward.
Yeah.
Like choosing who to listen to.
It's almost like pricing at a certain point is positioning for you for the business because it attracts a different type of person. And if you're a little higher tier versus a lower tier.
One of the toughest things I think is being able to test it. So in the startup phase, when you're just starting up, it's just like, all right, just kind of go with your gut and maybe do some, you know, analysis on your competition and that sort of thing. But down the road, you know, if you want to change prices, increase prices, decrease prices, you're not going to get results from that within a week or even within a month. Like you can really only gauge the long-term impact of that after several months of testing.
And yeah. The fear is if you get it wrong, you're going to like derail yourself for months.
Right. Speaking of Basecamp and Jason Fried, I think he had his most recent Inc. column was about his thinking behind like they're planning some big price increase on Basecamp.
Oh.
And I think he was just saying like, I mean, they're so big that they can weather a 6-month test like that. If it's a drastic price increase and it doesn't pan out for them, you know, tens of millions in profit a month, they can handle that sort of thing. But
yeah, I'm looking at Basecamp right now. It's hard to tell from their insanely unique pricing page. Of course, it's insanely unique. It feels right if you upgrade and pay a flat $99 per month, which sounds to me more expensive than Basecamp used to be.
Yeah.
It shows only one tier. It just says, try Basecamp with your team for 30 days. If you feel it's right for you, upgrade and pay a flat $99 a month with no per user fees. Interesting.
Yeah, I think that is like going after like a different, little bit higher tier. Like I've, with project management software, even with Basecamp, it's always been what, $39, $29?
Something around there. I think at some point we went up to 49, but it's 99 without the per user fee. Mm-hmm. So is that really a higher end? Because if they're going higher end, especially for a project management tool, which by its nature is user based,
right?
Mm-hmm. You would think that they would do something like 49 per user and have yeah. lots of accounts.
Yeah, but if you think about the modern version of businesses and agencies these days, the user thing changes depending on the project. It's like people yeah. must be actively like gaming their pricing system to like add people on and then take them off. And that must encourage some strange behavior as opposed to just saying, anyone who thinks $99 a month is too expensive, don't use it. Anyone who thinks it's cheap is going to get a good deal and everything's straightforward.
Yeah. That's the thing about pricing too, is like a lot of SaaS companies, they tie it to these weird things that end up actually hurting the people using the product or like, you know, it doesn't have like the best interest of them in mind. So like if you're able to tie the pricing down to something that's actually going to get them to use the product and be more successful with it, I think is always like a winning situation. But it's hard to find that like, you know, like with me, like I send them leads, like what am I going to charge them for how many leads they email? Like that would be a sort of successful thing for me to do because that would mean they email more of the leads and they win more of the work. But how am I going to, you know, it's very tough to find the thing you can actually kind of measure there. I feel like.
I agree. I think the metric to base it on is just as hard as the level of pricing.
Yeah.
We've struggled with that so much and we keep, maybe this is like founder driven because this is the way I think, but we base all of our pricing on revenue. Just really straightforward.
Yeah.
If you make,
I think anytime you can simplify it.
But I keep looking around for other examples of people doing it based on revenue. I just don't see it out there. which I don't know if you want to tie pricing to value, isn't that like the ultimate value? But no one does it.
So, are e-commerce shopping carts based on value or based on revenue?
No, everything's based on features and number of products and just weird shit that doesn't.
So
e-commerce just did a pricing change that is partly based on how much money you make. But was that Robert?
I was going to say, I just did this actually. I just remembered, like, I have a platform for freelancers separate from Workshop called Folio. And so it's like, you know, a typical, not totally typical. There's some differences, but it's kind of like a marketplace like Upwork or just a little bit more higher quality projects on there. And we kind of guide the clients or whatever, but
that's good to know. What's the site?
It's Folio, Folio.me.
All right.
I didn't choose the domain name actually. So
what'd you do? Did you buy it or something?
The original founder, gave me the service. So.
Cool.
But anyways, I had to kind of, I redesigned the service and I had to tie pricing down to something, right? It's technically free to use, to reply to these gigs on there and to use the platform. But I actually ended up adding a new feature that you have to pay for monthly, which is like you can reply to the projects for free. And then to attach a portfolio piece, that's where you have to have a pro account, like a and your reply gets sorted up to the top of the heap. So people who kind of value their time a little more and want a little bit better chance at winning the projects, they're able to kind of upload a specific portfolio piece that directly ties to the project at hand. And so that's actually been pretty successful so far. Like I launched it last month with kind of a silent launch. I don't know what those are called, where you don't actually do anything. You just launch it.
Yeah.
And
you mean every feature?
Yeah. And it's been awesome. Like, That monthly recurring, just slowly seeing it build up because of that subtle kind of tweak to it. Mm-hmm. Because then it's not so much like I'm having to pitch people on it all the time. It's when they go to reply to one of these projects, they have the option there to get upsold.
Oh, it's at the time when they go to reply, they have the option there.
Yeah.
Very nice. I like that. I like those when you're 90% in, you're already committed, and then you get presented with it. It's kind of like, all right, it's up to you.
Yeah.
You want to upgrade or not? You don't have to upgrade.
I feel like as a consumer, I've got to know what the pricing at least starts at before I spend any time evaluating a tool or a solution.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like this past week, I've been looking at marketing
entryway.
I've been looking at marketing funnel metrics tracking apps because I'm setting up a marketing plan right now, and I'm probably just going to fall back on using Mixpanel for this. But you know, there's a lot of these that are clearly marketed at like higher end, you know, larger teams, enterprise, and it's call for a consultation or get a free demo. And I mean, it's kind of hard to tell though. Like they're showing features that kind of compete directly with other tools that are like $100 a month. So I'm trying to figure out, like, is this in that same ballpark or are we talking like $500, $1,000 a month? Like, at least just tell me what ballpark it is. Even if the only way to sign up is to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I don't want to waste any time if it's completely out of my budget.
I know, but they know if they tell you the price up front, you'll compare it on price instead of comparing it on what they want you to compare it to, which they'd like to convey to you over the phone.
Wow. Yeah, but you know what?
While you're looking at their screen of a fancy looking case study.
I think it depends on the market and the product, because there are some markets like that, like an analytics tool. If you're in the market for an analytics tool, you're familiar with you're tech savvy, you're web savvy enough to know that there are 1,000 of these tools out there, and you are comparing tools. Like there are probably very few customers who are just discovering analytics for the first time, and the first one that comes up on Google, they're just going to talk to somebody and buy. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
I think that's the sort of thing that is very feature based, and you do want to compare the tech specs on those.
I feel like even going down to like the service level where it's project based and custom, like that's one of the things I think freelancers kind of shoot themselves in the foot with the same way, is like if you went to Amazon and you were going to buy something, you wouldn't want to buy something that didn't have a price on it, like or like a timeline on it. Like, kind of defining that stuff is in itself just like risk aversion for the client. So
yeah, in a lot of ways it's a hurdle. You know, it's a hurdle to it makes it more difficult for the customer to buy. And I'm not saying that there are some consulting services that should be like, it definitely helps to do like live demos, like we've talked about in the past, and live, you know, one-on-one sales. If you're doing like high touch sales with a higher price point, I'm usually on the side of show some sort of indication of price, whether it's like starting at $5,000 a month or.
I'm with you as a consumer. As the business, I disagree completely. How am I
going to? I'm saying as a business, like it.
Well, why?
Because it qualifies the leads before they talk to you.
I guess. I mean, you can send out signals without an exact price range. You know, where you can say like projects. I think Shopify does this with their. They have like an experts page, and they have. You can filter. Okay, let me look at a Shopify design agency. And they just say project starting at 10,000. That's all.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's good enough. That's
giving you a dessert. Yeah. So what I was going to say was, how can you? How am I going to close you on a $25,000 project? If I say that number up front, you have no interest. But if I convince you that it's worth a lot more, then you're much more willing to pay for it. But you're saying, give me an indicator.
Yeah, but so I mean, by the time you get into the conversation of. This project is going to cost $25,000. You know, like the person is already qualified that they're in the market for that sort of level of service and price point. If there's no number, no mention of any dollar amounts anywhere on the site, then you're just going to get plenty of calls and leads that are just like either kicking the tires or a lot of leads who just walk away because they assume it's way too much when maybe it's not as much as they think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you on the qualification piece. It's a tricky thing.
Yeah. So what else?
Here's something that I've been thinking about lately. I'm still kicking around ideas for pricing on this calendar tool that we're building with Audience Ops.
What about free trials? Like a length of a free trial? Does it depend on what the tool is?
Credit card required or not?
I tend to favor requiring the credit card one way or the other, but I guess I'm wondering about like how long of a free trial to offer. Some apps don't offer a free trial. They just offer like a 30-day money back guarantee, something like that. Any thoughts on these options?
This kind of goes back to Basecamp's pricing that we talked about, but Jason, I heard him do an interview, I guess, where he was talking about that, this kind of topic of like free trials, and they had changed Basecamp to be like the you would sign up and you would get one project and that was free forever. They saw a bunch more signups happen as a result, but not as many. Like once you needed more than one project, that's when you would put in your credit card info and whatever. And they saw a lot more signups in general, but a lot less conversions to paid, I guess. Mm-hmm. So the thought process was like, yeah, the free trial is what was actually getting the conversions because there's like
it forces them to make a decision.
Yeah, there's a moment there where it's like, okay, here's where you got to make the decision.
Yeah,
I tend to think for a free trial, you shouldn't ask for a credit card because you don't need it. Like, it doesn't really make sense to me as a like going back to as a consumer, like.
Yeah.
If you really want me to try this out, if you want me to be impressed by it, then why do I have to give the credit card if it is a free trial? But
I can kind of see the argument both ways on that. I think it depends on the user, but my hesitation to do that is that it requires another action.
Yeah.
14 days or 30 days later. Whereas if you require the credit card, you can just send them onboarding emails that kind of warn them, like, hey, your trial is ending, but
don't forget the amount of support and help that you'll be providing to people who you don't actually know if they're going to sign up.
Right.
Depending on how complicated the product is, you might get a lot of free trials. Yeah. We're in the middle, right? So the card abandonment product does not require a credit card, but in that we see it as selling drugs. We just want them to try it because we know once they start getting recovered revenue, they'll be hooked, that type of analogy. Mm-hmm. So we don't require it, but that has caused an enormous amount of pain. Forget the pain. It has caused us not to grow revenue as quickly because it requires that action at the end of the trial. And some people, even though they have a successful trial, they just don't take that action. And then we end up chasing them down. So what we're doing is a little mix of what Robert just mentioned with the upgrade. We are now flipping over to, you can create a free trial. You can set up your campaign, but right at the time when you launch your campaign, right when you're about to get the value, we ask you to put a credit card on file.
Yeah, I like that.
It's like you can activate it. You can do what you can connect. You can really get to experience it, but you want that value, put a credit card on file.
Yeah, and it's also like they're in the mindset or in the mode of being engaged with the thing, whereas 30 days later, they might be completely distracted with something else going on. Even if they've seen value in the free trial and they want to do it at some point, they might just be too busy. Whereas at the time that they initially sign up, they're totally engaged. And at the time when they're like activating and launching their campaign, they're also engaged. Mm-hmm. So that's a good time to kind of, you know, make that decision.
So as far as like the calendar feature or whatever, like what is the, in order to kind of do like tie the trial period to something, like what does the tool actually do?
Well, it's basically, it's called Audience Ops Calendar. It's going to be like an editorial calendar tool it's like a project management tool for managing content marketing, and it's all built around a calendar with some automated checklists and delegating to your team and that sort of stuff. I'm thinking just like a standard, like don't reinvent the wheel. Let's just do a 30-day trial.
Right. The question is, how long does it take for them to get value? And what do they need to do? I think 14 days sounds a little short for that type of thing.
Right. I think 30 days, because you know, if you're developing, say, blog articles, it takes a couple of weeks to fully develop that and you know.
But the idea is to kind of get ingrained into their process in that 30 days, and then they don't want to give it up.
Something that's funny, because it is a calendar that they're going to be looking at, like, you'll be able to say exactly where the trial ends for them.
That's true. You can mark it on the calendar. That's a good point. I haven't even thought about that. So related to that, another question. I know, Jordan, we've talked a lot about webinar funnels in the past for selling a SaaS. And that's something that I'm kind of working on right now, planning out a webinar funnel to sell this. And at the end of the webinar, you want to make an exclusive offer that's different from what you can just get from going straight to the website. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about offering like an annual plan at a big discount, and offering extras. You get like checklists and guides and all this stuff. I'm thinking about doing something along those lines. I don't know exactly what the deal will be that you can purchase off of the webinar. But then that's a question. It was like, I think that should be like buy now. You pay on day one out of the webinar. Whereas if you come straight to the site, you can get a free trial.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a better deal to buy now.
That and scarcity and a deadline and
right.
And true value, real incentives. You know, I mean, you're lucky. You have assets. You have courses that you've done in the past that you can throw in to make it more valuable. That's how I see people doing it really well. What their value stack of what they're adding on makes a good argument to be worth the money, just that stuff. And then it starts to become kind of overwhelming value. And you have that ability because you have all this stuff to stack on top of it from all the things you've created in the past.
One of the writers on my team for Audience Ops is we're working on like a big guide, like a big like training guide that'll actually be like a free resource, but you know, that'll be kind of given away and some extra training material, but then some sort of like package of like multiple months with, you know, a discount would be the offer off of a like an educational training webinar, which I'm going to be doing live for the next couple of months as we get like from now to launch. And then probably next year work on doing some sort of like automated webinars, which I haven't done before. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. The funnel thing I think it's like an interesting, really interesting topic. And I've kind of gone from like, I basically sell my services and stuff like via, like everybody does. Some people do drip campaigns, email drips, like there's the webinars, there's the, all these different things. And I feel like in general, I've been paralyzed at times trying to set up like the perfect funnel at time, like for every different product I have, when I feel like the reality is it's no matter how perfect I set it up, it's going to be like a messy process for any customer that's coming in. They're going to go to one website. They're going to see this tweet. They're going to go, you know, see an article somewhere. Then they'll come back, and no matter what, like the data shows that as well. Like the average customer goes to your website like 30 times or something before they purchase. So
that's the hardest thing. Attribution. Right?
Who knows? It's
yeah. Impossible. So it's like, I like the idea of the webinars, and I like the idea of having the drip campaigns, and maybe giving each one of these different access points like something unique about it. Like in the drip, you can get this one thing or like whatever, but just having that stuff, I think is the key, really, like doing it consistently and keeping it going, because you don't know how they're going to come in, and trying to be like too perfect about it, all it does is kind of paralyze you in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Alan,
I feel that pain.
Hello.
Alan, you there? Yo.
Yes, there I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I started to call you when I was out there in Salem, and I was like, no, I don't want to die during a podcast in Salem by myself.
So you're back on land.
I'm still on the boat. No, I'm at anchor now. I'm in a little bayou called Smack Bayou, and so I'm at anchor now. So I'm good now. I'm safe. Well, relatively safe, but I'm okay.
All right.
Cool. How's it going, man? What are you up to right now?
Well, this weekend we are some buddies and I, and we all have sailboats, and we're going to take them all, and then we're camping out on them, and having a dude's weekend.
Awesome.
Very nice.
So, you know, we've been talking about like pricing and different things, but you know, we got a quick update from Rob Williams, who's also here on the line, you know, from Workshop and Jordan, of course. But so we know that you guys exited less. I mean, what's happening now? I know you've been doing some consulting. You're working on like less films. What are you kind of focused on right now?
Yeah. So it was crazy. Literally the day we signed our contracts, I had an old client come. Well, he's not actually old, but a former client come to us and say like, hey, you guys available for contract work? And we're like, yeah. And so we're actually building right now. We're building a sort of a video community for a guy named Sam Merrill. And the project's called Welp Fit. And it's Sam Merrill, if you're familiar with Flip This House on TLC.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing real estate courses and stuff for about 10 years and has an email list of about 3 million people. And so we're creating all the, you know, download this course and follow up with this course and drip emails and all the stuff we use on this accounting we're now doing on his product. And so we should be launching that product for him first of the year, in the January, something like that.
Very cool.
It's basically like, it's like Code School or, you know, Team Treehouse or Lynda.com for people who want to invest in real estate.
Nice. Is that like happening under the banner of Less Everything? And is that like a startup software development agency at this point? You guys have a team and everything?
Yeah, we have a team of 4 developers. We hired a full-time designer. I'm helping out a little bit, doing some front-end stuff and some design stuff. And we have a full team again. A bigger team than we had previously. We hired a few people. It's strictly a contract project, so we're billing hourly again and applying the things that we learned the past 8 years into this product. And so we were able to get a consulting project and have more people on it because we have the story of bootstrapping Less Accounting and selling it and all that sort of knowledge of life cycle emails and onboarding and all that kind of stuff.
Very interesting. Yeah, we've been talking the past 2 episodes, really talking the difference between software and services, and can a software company realistically add a service into the offering? Robert has like a mix of a product and service. Brian is running a service but actively building a product, and now listening, you know, hearing from you, you just went from a product and now immediately dove right back into services. I'm curious about the prospect of having a consulting client. How do you feel about it? Just the differences between what you just dealt with and trying to grow Less Accounting, where you need a lot of numbers in terms of the number of customers, versus the service, which you need fewer people, but you know, you got to deal with a different animal.
We had this shift in this industry, and Brian has been a big part of it with prioritizing services, right? And so like services was like such a dirty word like 5 years ago. It was like, oh, you have a service you sell? Oh, you know, someone told me like, well, I don't have that SaaS money. And I was like, what? It's SaaS money's hard.
Yes,
it's not like free money that rains from the sky. It's really hard to get people to buy something over and over and over and over again. So I don't really mind right now having clients. You know, you always have someone you're beholden to, whether it's thousands of small customers or one or two large clients. Certainly there's better cash flow in SaaS, and that's nicer. It's more predictable because all it takes is two or three people to get mad at you in a service business and your cash flow really changes. I don't mind it. I think there's a lot of ego around SaaS and pretending that we're free and, oh, you know, I don't have a client. I have SaaS recurring money. I've had both money and, I think both can be stressful, both can be equally awesome, equally stressful, depending on what you're selling and who you're selling it to and how you've set them up to respect you and appreciate you.
Where do you see this going for Less Everything? Is this kind of like a stage where you're kind of doing a bunch of contract projects, and obviously you guys have built some recognition for what you do, and like, do you see yourself doing this continually for a while or building into some other product or other evolution, or where do you see it?
Well, you know, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I don't really know. So I know right now we're enjoying not running a product and not having the stress of all the marketing stuff and customer support and onboarding. It's nice kind of being just, and the client, you know, our client has their experience with landing pages, and he has this, he's not saying anything, he has a whole team around him. The guy's named Andy, and Andy is super smart. And so it's nice working with clients who are smart and have equal knowledge that you have. But what we'll do long-term, I have no idea. I know for the next few years, we're going to keep doing contract work and making money and being profitable that way. But we may build another product for ourselves one day. There's always lots of ideas, right? There's 9,000 ideas. It's what do you want to work on for the next 5 years? And that we have, you know, I don't want to go spend 3 years building a product that I'm not super stoked about. And so we're just kind of taking our time and we're lucky to have this nice story of selling less accounting that clients tend to think is pretty awesome and they come to us wanting some help.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that for sure. I mean, it's when you've built some sort of audience and then some focus around something, like you guys are kind of focused on building software startups, you know, you do attract better clients, better people to work with, people who know you, who know what you're all about. So you're not going to have the classic stresses of dealing with personalities and people that you just won't get along with that most freelancers and consultants face, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's never good to be the vendor that gets picked because you're the cheapest. And that sets you up for all sorts of disrespect and iterations that shouldn't be, and they don't trust you. And because they're looking at you as a cheap person. And we're lucky to have a few clients right now that really respect us and value our opinions and letting us run with a lot of, and we'll bring them decisions. What do you think about this? And they're just like, I don't care. Run with it. I'm like, all right, cool. And so that's nice. And it's nice too. You know, I've always said with SaaS, there's never any highs and lows like to celebrate, you know, which is nice and bad. It's nice because it's like even cash flow and it's predictable most of the time. But it's fun getting big checks again, right? Like, oh yeah, we got big checks coming in. Who wants a bonus? You know, that kind of thing. That's fun, right? And so that sort of, and we're still in the honeymoon phase of the whole contracting thing. I'm not pretending that it's going to be, you know, buckets of money and unicorns for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating point in terms of the celebration involved. We have one product that sometimes we get big customers paying us $500 and more a month, and that feels so good. That's like, today's a good day.
Yeah.
I closed that business, today's a good day. And then the new product, we only have one pricing tier because we want it to start off really simple, and it doesn't feel the same way. I'm like, oh, it's all just the same. Like, so what if they're a really big, successful company? Cool, we can use their logo, but they should be paying us more money. So we're opening up a second tier, you know, partly to kind of get after that same type of a feeling where not only does it feel good, it feels right for the business. Yes, we're working with bigger companies. Things are more successful. We're making them more money. We're moving upward.
Yeah, I mean, with Audience Ops, I track it like MRR, like a typical SaaS, you know, because it's basically retainer-based, everything we do. But, you know, it's like one of those things. There are pros and cons to both the service and the software side of things. And with what we're seeing is, you know, we can hit MRR milestones really quickly and, you know, go up by 10K, you know, over a matter of 30, 60 days. And then just a couple of clients cancel and you take a pretty big MRR dip when it's much different than like a 49 a month app where it stays probably a little bit more stable. But yeah, it can be a lot of ups and downs there.
I'm curious why Alan did sell less accounting. I know.
Why we did sell it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we did it for 8 years. And so we probably actually sold it too late. We should have probably sold it a few years ago. We just didn't know that there was a market that existed. We just got tired of working on it. You know, after a while, you look at all these. I literally got a call this morning before I left. We got in Corey, and Corey was like, "You know, what made you guys grow?" And I was like, "I don't even know. I don't know." it was such a trudge. I was like, "Here's what I can tell you: it's a dogfight the whole time. You always feel like you're getting your ass kicked." And at some point after 8 years, it just felt like, I don't know what to do next. What do we do next with this thing? Because there's always a feature ideas, but no feature ever is the thing that catapults you to this hockey stick growth. And so you just start going like, yeah, all these ideas sound great, but we don't even know what to do next. Which led us to just not being super excited to work on it. And, you know, it just wasn't fair to the customers and fair to the product. And, you know, SEI took care of the sale and were awesome, made it easy for us. That was the other thing too. Years past, it was like, we should sell it. We're like, how do we do that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. You mentioned that you felt you should have sold it years earlier. I wonder if you had, because like leading up to when I was selling Restaurant Engine, I was hesitating a lot because I felt like maybe selling it is in a way giving up or kind of a failure on it. Or, you know, if only I could really push on this thing for 2 or 3 more years, it could be much bigger.
And we literally had those same discussions, Steve and I, days before signing the contract. We're like, maybe we should keep it. You know, maybe we should add these features. Maybe we are giving up. I don't know. I think that's what I've realized as becoming an adult. I have this sort of like internal compass of what I think is right. But then most of the time I spend my time going like second guessing myself and thinking like, no, you're probably wrong and you're probably screwing it all up. Yep. But at the end of the day, we got a very good metric of our revenue, probably higher than what we deserved because the marketing was so good. We had so much organic traffic. I mean, we were getting like 100,000 unique visitors a month, not counting people that logged in strictly from articles and content marketing. And so we got a much higher metric and we had a bidding war at the end. We had five letters of intent going at one time. It was who would give us the most money, who would close the fastest. And so it was a little bit of a bidding war. And SEI was awesome. David, Ishmael, Thomas are all awesome. And made the process easy for us. And then the people that bought us are awesome too. They said, we said, well, how long do we have to stick around for? And they said, we don't really need you guys. Which was really awesome, but a real big blow to my ego. They're like, no, we don't really need you so much. We don't need your. I'm like, you sure? You sure you don't need? Nope, we don't. I'm like, okay, cool. See you later.
That's huge, man. I had a 6-month earnout, and part of it was, I didn't spend a ton of time on it, but I was kind of required to be there for, you know, training calls and just be there when questions come up. And, you know, it was only a small portion was on the earnout, but still it's like, you know, I don't want to, I mean, now I'm well past that. It's like, it was a huge weight off my shoulders once it was past that.
Yeah. It's nice just having new problems to focus on. It's just refreshing. I mean, 8 years on a SaaS product, 8 years in internet years is like 500 years in normal years. I mean, that is a long time to be working on one. And you're trying to deal with the same customers and the same problems. And, you know, it needs new, fresh eyes. And they're adding features. They're adding good features and enhancing things, making things better. And stuff that we just didn't have the mental capacity, energy, enthusiasm to build.
Yeah.
So it was time.
So what we were, just before we like wrap up real quick.
Yeah.
What we were originally going to talk about today was kind of like balancing, you know, family life and work and entrepreneurship. You know, Alan, you know, on Facebook, you're basically living on a boat, it looks like.
Yeah.
What does that balance look like for you? I mean, I know, you know, going back years, you've always been, you know, all about keeping a stress-free balance there. Anything that you guys are doing differently now, you know, especially as you're getting back into contract work?
Nothing really differently. There's no real balance. And just realizing like there's seasons to like right now it's so beautiful outside. I would just sit in my office today looking outside going like, oh my God, why can't I be outside right now doing this sailing or something? And it's crazy that I wouldn't just go out and just sail. I mean, I have to get work done. And so actually I spent a little time last night before I went to bed answering a few emails, but if I am unable to take a Friday off when the weather's beautiful, then what's the point of owning my own business?
Yeah.
So, and if I can't adjust my schedule when daylight savings comes around, I have to wake up earlier, you know, if I can't make those adjustments, then like, what's the point of we all have business. Like then if we're not accommodating our lives for the business or accommodating the business for our lives, then we're really a slave to our business. And then like the business is really an ego thing for us. It's not really, the business has always been here for Steve and I to maximize like the, what we can return out of our lives for. Like, so when I travel now, I travel with my kids. I know Brian took a long trip with his kids, total business write-off. If you can't do that, then like, what's the point of having these businesses? But it's easier just to go get a job, right?
I couldn't agree more.
Unless you, 100%. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about like pushing on it and building and keep on, you know, growing the business, growing the team, growing the assets. But everything that I work on, I want to make sure that like I can work on this for a week or so and put some systems in place and then give it to someone else. And then it continues to run like every little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have plenty of friends who are entrepreneurs who are great people, great family people, and they are complete slaves to their business. They can't take a day off and their business dictates their whole entire life. And that's, I will get a job before I do that. Yep. You know, and business and life and everything, it's not one or two big decisions that makes your business flexible enough for your life. It's hundreds of little things of, you know, hiring the right people and teaching them what to do and just being like, F this, I'm taking Friday off to go sailing. I don't care. You know, if my business falls apart today while I'm on my sailboat, something's wrong with my business. Something is wrong.
Yep.
You know, it's not sailing fault. So it's, and we've also been doing this for almost 10 years now. So we have a lot of great people around us. My business partner is amazing. My wife is amazing. We have amazing employees who have been around. We have Eugene, one of our programmers, has been around for 8 years. So it's not like if I'm unreachable by phone, no one can get the servers back up or something, right? Like it's not, there's no real mistake that's going to, you know, kill the company on Friday because Alan's on a sailboat.
Speaking of, it's 1 o'clock on a Friday here. I got to head out and grab some lunch and enjoy some fall weather up here. So, Ellis, good to catch up with you real quick.
Let me get to work over here on the West Coast. Alan, yeah. Robert, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Good time with you.
All right. The party episode in the can. See you, Brian.
All right, later, guys.